me fucking scoot back a little so I guess fucking so I don't punch the microphone.
Hey, come listen to our podcast, yeah. Please listen, it's a hitch. If you don't listen to our podcast, yeah, then you are a bitch.
Maybe that one.
So welcome to Filmoscopy Podcast, where there's a hole in the world like a great black pit, and it's filled with people who are filled with shit, and yeah, the vermin of the world inhabit it.
Yo, he got bars, though.
Yo, Sweeney Todd straight spitting.
The first rapper, dude. Holy shit.
Coming at you from the mid-19th century.
Is that song in the play? Like, so this is adapted from like an actual stage play, right?
Yeah, so I was actually, funny that you ask. Before we get into it, I'm Cody. Joining me is Owen. And Lance is not here today. He's having some issues, personal issues, that didn't allow him to join us. So
he's got monkeypox.
Yeah, he's got the monkeypox. He stayed on a ship too long in the Atlantic, and it really messed him up.
Yeah, when you're out there alone, you know, you have to do what you got to do with the men that you're with. And we salute Lance. So
yeah, so the question you were asking, yes, it is adapted from a play, like you said. I was watching some behind-the-scenes videos on the Blu-ray this morning after I watched the movie. In the behind-the-scenes stuff, they said that, like, they changed some of the songs up a little bit. Mostly, like, condensed them down, I guess, slightly. Because in the actual play, you have a lot of, like, other, like, just background actors or whatever that join in on the songs. And they didn't really want that in the film. They wanted to have it where the main characters are the focus, you know.
Yeah, you noticed that in a couple of the... I mean, I guess there's some leftover... I don't know. I guess, spoiler alert, the old lady isn't necessarily who you think she is. But, you know, when she walks away, she has, like, a little line.
Yeah.
Kind of reminded me of something that would be like the...
Like in a play, like a stage play.
Yeah, just a background character kind of joining in.
Yeah, and you know how stage plays are too. Like they'll be like on the city street or something. You'll have like just like a random group of passersby or whatever.
Yeah,
that join in.
Yeah, they'll play the background and shit like that.
Yeah, so they cut all that sort of stuff out and really just let it focus on the characters. Funnily enough, this was Johnny Depp's and Helena Bonham Carter's first time doing songs, like singing for any kind of like production.
Yeah.
Johnny
Depp's in a band though, so.
Yeah, know, but I think he's a guitar player. I don't know, maybe he sings nowadays, but I know for a while he was just a guitar player.
Well, he did pretty good in this. When I first heard him sing, I didn't know he was in, before I watched this, I didn't know he was in a band. I had to look it up. But when he first opened his mouth, I was like, oh yeah, he's probably not going to be all that great. And then he actually like hit some pretty good notes and I was like, oh, okay. So he's actually decent.
Yeah. And the music in this is like really, I can't think of a single song that in this film that I'm just like, oh, this kind of sucks or whatever.
Yeah. You like them all?
Yeah, I do. Do you have any that like you just didn't like really?
No, I'm kind of neutral towards all of them. I mean, I think I don't know. I don't know what has been. I want to know what. So are all the songs that are in this pretty much outside of what you had said about the background characters not joining in? Are they faithful to like, you know, the stage play? Are they like the same practically?
I don't know. I didn't go in and like listen to any of it from the stage play itself. But you know what?
Fuck it. We'll do it live.
So, pulling up the soundtrack for the stage play, a lot of the songs are the same. Now, there's way less songs in the movie, which could be a part of the whole, like, you know, cutting out a lot of the chorus singing and all that kind of stuff that's, you know, part of a stage play itself. But the songs that are in the movie are in the play, so they didn't like come up with like any kind of original material or
no original compositions within this.
Right.
Okay, then I guess I can't really rag on the movie for any of the songs that I did find a little bit grating. I mean, I guess disclaimer for me is like I've never been a big fan of musical music. The only musical I think I've ever watched that I've really liked the music was probably Rocky Horror Picture Show, and the only reason I liked that was because it was like it's like glam rock, you know, it's like 50s rock and roll and shit, so it's
yeah,
like,
it's not like your typical like
yeah,
and he was beautiful.
But I could see how, you know, some of this stuff's pretty catchy. There's ones that I like, you know, I can see how you could find The Worst Pies in London to be pretty good. Or like, the one that the little boy, whatever his name is, Toby, like mm-hmm. when he's, you know, up on the, when they're doing the snake oil salesman routine shit, you know, his is pretty good. But you know, like Pretty Women gets on, like, I thought Pretty Women was kind of grating. That might have been Alan Rickman, though.
Yeah, that's one he sings when the judge comes into the barbershop, right?
Yeah.
He
says, pretty pussy, pulsating. He said, sucking clits, fascinating.
Yeah, and I do think, like, and I know this is a big thing in a lot of like stage plays too, but toward the end of the film, you do get a lot of reprises that come in.
Yeah.
And I do like how they twist some of them. Like, you know, you were mentioning Toby's song when he's introducing the snake oil salesman, or you know, the piss salesman.
Yes.
And
looks like piss. I like that one.
Smells like piss.
That's a good line.
Yeah, it's like this is what they say. It's like this is piss with ink.
Yeah, it's piss in ink or something like that.
All right, they bring it back around later, like when they start, you know, killing people and using them for the meat pies. Mm-hmm. And he's out on the street, like beckoning people in or whatever. It's the same song, but you know, it was obviously changed because he's out there hollering for meat pies instead of miracle elixir or whatever. But yeah, so before we get any more in depth in the movie, is this your first time watching it, or what is your experience with this film?
Okay, so prior, when I think I was about around when this movie came out, I believe I had maybe watched like bits and pieces of it. Funny enough, at that time I remember this movie really like I don't know. I had this thing when I was a kid where I just really didn't like unwitting cannibalism, like, and stuff like that. Like, it always freaked me out. And like, I don't know. I guess that's the word for it. You know, it always just bothered me. So I remember this movie like really bothering me, like the whole concept behind it. But I mean, as an adult, it doesn't really bother me anymore. But I barely remembered anything about it from that period. So this is really like the first time I think I've ever watched it all the way through and remember anything about it.
Okay. For me, I would have watched it probably a couple of years after it came out. I seem to remember getting it on DVD. I was already working, so this would have been my senior year of high school. So that would have been 2009, latter half of 2009, I guess. And I watched it a handful of times back then. I've watched it sparingly throughout the years, but I think before today, it'd probably been at least 6 or 7 years minimum since I'd watched it. So I couldn't remember a whole lot from it anyway, obviously, I just remember, like, you know, who some of the big actors were and, you know, what the general premise of the film was.
Yeah.
I didn't even remember that the whole point was, like, that he wanted revenge against the judge because he believed that he caused her to kill herself. I just remembered it was about, you know, Sweeney Todd being a barber and there's, you know, Miss Lovett's meat pie shop and, you know, all the interaction there. But let me go through the details real quick and then we'll get back to talking about the film in general. So Sweeney Todd, the demon barber of Fleet Street, is the film adaptation of the 1979 stage play written by Stephen Sondheim and Hugh Willer. There have been a couple of other film adaptations, like from the 1920s and 30s. There was like a silent film, and there was another, you know, black and white film that had sound and all that. But the origins of Sweeney Todd itself, like the story itself, come from Penny Dreadfuls back in the 19th century. Okay. And it was one of those things that kind of became legend, I guess, where it was so believable that people actually thought that Sweeney Todd was a real person at some point. Even to the point where, like, in London, you know, you have I don't remember the address because I'm not a big Sherlock Holmes fan. But Sherlock Holmes, there's like an address, in physical address in London that you can go to, and it's supposed to be like Sherlock Holmes' house, right? And the same goes for Sweeney Todd. There's like actually an address on Fleet Street that is supposedly, you know, Sweeney Todd's address from back when he allegedly existed.
Yeah, on Skeet Street, you mean?
Yeah. The red light district.
Just the rose covered nut. Just jizz everywhere.
So the film is directed by Tim Burton. The screenplay was written by John Logan. It released on December 21st, 2007 in the United States. It actually released about a month later in the United Kingdom. It has a running time of 116 minutes. It had a budget of $50 million and drew in a box office of $153.4 million. It actually won several awards, a multitude of awards, actually, including some Academy Awards. It was nominated. Johnny Depp was nominated for the Academy Award for Best Actor for this film.
Against what is what I want to know. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I thought maybe you had like the list in front of you.
No, you're good. I'll just Google it real quick. No big deal. Best Actor Academy Award nominees.
Can't even remember any movie that came out in 2007.
Off the top of my head, was Spider-Man 3 2007?
For some reason, I want to say it was before the. Let's see, Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End was number one in 2007.
So, obviously, Johnny Depp didn't win the Academy Award for Best Actor. He was nominated. But the other four nominees were George Clooney for the film Michael Clayton, Tommy Lee Jones for In the Valley of Elah, Daniel Day-Lewis for There Will Be Blood, and Viggo Mortensen for Eastern Promises. I don't know, based on looking at this, who won, but I'm going to guess it was probably Daniel Day-Lewis, because if not, that is a travesty that if he didn't win for There Will Be Blood.
Yeah, that's the only movie I know from that list.
Sorry, now I'm like on a...
It's okay.
Okay, yeah, Daniel Day-Lewis did win the award for that. Shoo!
There Will Be Come.
I drink your milkshake.
There Will Be Blood. I've never even seen There Will Be Blood. Damn, I'm so like, oh, really? I'm such a, you know, child when it comes to my, how much film I've watched.
Yeah, we got to do There Will Be Blood one day. That is such a fucking good movie. But yeah, it won. It did win an Academy Award for Best Art Direction.
You know, honestly, also, and I mean, maybe this might be what you would consider a hot take. I don't think this is Tim Burton's best work in terms of art direction.
No, no, of course not. I mean,
I didn't even think it was really that necessarily like stylistic. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like the color palettes were just muted, and that was kind of it.
So I actually thought, I was thinking about this while watching it. So it does have a lot of Tim Burton style, right? But during the majority of the film, when you're in that dark, damp, moist, London, meaty London, you know, it's very much like Tim Burton style kind of just gets swallowed up by everything else, because they were kind of blending his style with like a typical
with how like shitty Victorian London actually was.
Yeah. So, but the one part of the film where his style really pops is during the song where Miss Lovett is singing about how she like her and Todd can go off and have like a good life together and all that kind of stuff, you know, where it's showing like them on the beach and all that, because like you've got these characters that are very much like Tim Burton-esque characters, like just juxtaposed
to the bright colorful
bright colorful like surroundings. That is like where his style really like stands out in this film. But no, it's not like, this isn't, as far as like art direction goes, this isn't Beetlejuice, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
And I also really liked the set in the bake. I liked the, you know, the big meat grinder and stuff looked really cool. It kind of looked, I don't know. It like, it feels like it kind of captures this. It seems like something you would kind of see on like a stage play, but like in a good way, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and watching the behind the scenes stuff for this, they kind of used a mix of actual like built sets and CG, and I think a lot of the CG kind of comes across like when you get stuff like where it's panning out or you know, and you see like the cityscape and stuff, like it's very clear that it's CG. But like the build, like when they're down on street level and all that stuff, like there's actual like sets built, and it's always good to see, because I've gotten older, I've realized that I just prefer like practicality when it comes to effects, as opposed to like just CG. Like that's why it's kind of hard to go back and watch this. I know we bring up Star Wars on this fucking podcast all the time. Got to do it for Lance. That's why it's hard to go back and watch, like especially like the Phantom Menace. Because it's just everything CG.
A lot of like. Especially from this era of movies when this came out, you know, so much of that shit has CG practical effects. Like, you know, the old Spider-Man is a pretty good example. And I think, there's like a level where it feels like it kind of cheapens the, like even a good example is I'm watching Masters of the Air, which is like the, you know, like Band of Brothers and stuff like that, right? So those all had... What do you know what Masters of the Air is? I should probably just preface this.
Well, I've seen people talking about it and comparing. I guess I'm assuming based on seeing how people talk about it, it's like some kind of like World War II series or something.
Yeah, it's just like Band of Brothers and stuff. It's made by the same people. It's, you know, Steven Spielberg's a producer and stuff like that. So it's just about B-17 bombers. But, you know, like comparing, you know, I don't know, Saving Private Ryan and Band of Brothers to that, you know. Masters of the Air uses a lot of CG. And, you know, even to this point, and yeah, it's a TV show, it's not like a movie. But, I mean, you could still notice, and there's like a level where it'll take you out. I don't know.
One interesting tidbit I learned about the production of this film. So, apparently... The stage play in the 1979 stage play was not very successful at first. It wasn't successful, you know, until later on. But while it was in its run in 1980 in London, Tim Burton was actually over there studying. He was a film student at the time. And he went to see Sweeney Todd, I believe he said 17 times while he was there, because he was just so enamored with it. Yeah. Which makes sense, you know. Got that kind of gothic, you know, style about it. Mm-hmm. And in the early 80s, he had approached Stephen Sondheim, one of the writers of, you know, Sweeney Todd, about making a film adaptation of it. Now, this is like very early in Tim Burton's career when this happened, and nothing ever really came of it. I guess, you know, who knows what happened. I can see Sondheim being like, well, you're not really a proven director. Why would I do this with you? You know? So literally it was 16 years later. So this would have been early 2000s, 2002, 2003, when Burton, I guess, had learned that there was actually someone trying to write a screenplay for the film. And that's when he got in on the project or whatever. And, you know, it still took several years to do it, to get it made. But it finally happened for him. And when I heard the story, it made me think of, you know, you and I are both big Robert Eggers fans.
Yes.
And it made me think of how after The Witch was released, he had come out saying, like, he would love to do Nosferatu, but he felt like he needed to wait and get a few more movies under his belt before actually doing it, because he felt like it was too big. He would have too big of an ego, I guess, trying to make it that early in his career.
Yeah.
So this movie
is kind of like, I guess, his kind of pet project or whatever.
Yeah, this, the way I understand it, this was like Tim Burton's like dream project, basically. Like, he had wanted to make it for so long, and finally got the opportunity to do so.
If you ask me, he made it when he made Pee Wee Herman. No, I mean I kid, obviously, but I do think that, like, I don't know. I mean, you know, Beetlejuice is just such a damn good movie that it's like, you know, I don't know. It's funny to me. Like, I'm not saying that this is necessarily, like, I enjoyed this movie for what it was, but what I'm going to say is, like, it doesn't ping me as being the result of somebody's dream project, if you get what I mean. I'm not necessarily knocking it, but...
Yeah, I can kind of see where you're coming from, and especially because, like, and this may not have been, like, the biggest thing that he ever wanted to do. Obviously, he made several movies in his career that were, like, things that he loved back from when he was younger or whatever, like Mars Attacks, for example.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's based on those old trading cards or whatever from like the 60s and 70s or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, it's something, if I remember correctly, it's something he grew up enjoying collecting, and eventually he got to make a movie based on that. Mm-hmm. What's interesting though is, like, this is also like, I think a lot of people would consider the Sweeney Todd of coming out like past Tim Burton's prime, of course. Yeah.
When would you say that would be, around like post Charlie and the Chocolate Factory? No, he made something before that wasn't well received. I don't remember what it was.
Yeah, he so I'm trying to think. So Pee Wee Herman was his first film, like, yes, his first full length film, because he made that Frankenweenie short before that. So he made Pee Wee Herman, you know, whatever the fucking movie's called.
Yeah, Big Adventure.
Yeah. he made Beetlejuice, Batman.
He made Planet of the Apes adaptation. I don't even fucking remember this.
Yeah, that was early 2000s.
Was this? Oh yeah, I think this wasn't well received.
I don't, you know, it's hard for me to say, because I just pulled up his filmography to just give myself a reminder. There are so many of his films that I like that a lot of people are like, well, that's, you know, Tim Burton had gone downhill at that point.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of people would say that Tim Burton went downhill after fucking Edward Scissorhands or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I liked Edward Scissorhands from what I saw. Yeah, you really like his style, just his visual style.
But what I'm saying is, like, because people, like, are you, I mean, I think the first film in his filmography that you can really honestly look at and be like, oh, that is not a good movie, is Mars Attacks.
But I love Mars Attacks, though. Mars Attacks is good as shit.
I do, too. I enjoy it, but it's not a good movie. I mean, it's, yeah, like, literally, like, the first half of the movie has, like, a loose plot, and then, like, the second half of the movie is just, like, let's show a montage of the aliens just fucking everything up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I just thought it was, I don't know. It's just so stupid and fun, and I feel like it's, like, I don't know. That's kind of the point, I guess.
But I mean, you look at like Sleepy Hollow, I think is really good. I like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
I'm gonna be real with you. I wanted to like Sleepy Hollow, but it just, I don't know, it kind of went on for a while.
But yeah, well, that's just the story of Sleepy Hollow in general.
Yeah, you know, I guess you're right. Yeah, I don't know.
There's only so much you can do with a novella that was written in like fucking 1705 or whatever. Yeah. But, you know, there's movies even in his later years that I like. I like Alice in Wonderland, and I liked Dark Shadows, and, you know, even Dumbo, which was his most recent movie that he's released. I liked Dumbo.
Yeah, I remember people not liking the 2010 Alice in Wonderland.
But it's because it wasn't, like, a direct adaptation of the Disney animated movie in the day. You know, it was sort of almost like, it was almost like, it's hard to describe it. It's almost like weirdly a sequel, which I know it's not really a sequel to it, like literally, but it is like weirdly sort of a sequel or something, because it's like Alice is older. She's not a little girl, you know, she's older, and like the characters are talking about her like she had been there before, you know. Plus, there's like the whole,
he got away from Lewis Carroll's weird weird obsession with small children. I remember watching that, and I don't know, I thought it was okay. The thing about, I think, Tim Burton's filmography for me is like, I really like his early stuff, but I feel like as it goes on, and I mean, he'll have some good, you know, hits here and there as well, you know, like, you know, Love the Corpse Bride, of course. You know, I liked, you know, I always wanted to watch Frankenweenie, because Frankenweenie looks really good. So he still makes some good stuff here and there. It's just, it feels like a lot of his movies sometimes it's like more style over substance, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, I can see that. But
I mean, I don't know. I don't hold it against him or anything. I'm not saying like fucking, hey, you know, all of his movies are just fucking bullshit. No, I mean, I'm just, I feel like, you know, and I mean, this might be a marketing thing as well. It probably 100% is like a fucking marketing thing, like a studio kind of thing where it's like, oh, dude, your name's on this movie. You have to like, we have to put it in all the marketing, you know, everything's got to be fucking crazy, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think a lot of it too is because they know that Tim Burton has a very unique style, and there are people like me, for example, that are fans of his style. So, like, you know, it's even like slapping his name on Nightmare Before Christmas. And yeah, he came up with the story for it and all that. And I think he did like the design, like, you know, the art design or whatever, technically.
Yeah, it was just a short story, wasn't it, that he wrote?
Yeah, it was like a children's book. Oh. It wasn't even really a short story. It was like a children's book or poem or something like that.
Yeah, it was a poem, not even a short story. It was just like a poem or some shit.
Yeah, but you know, when people talk about it, people like say like, oh, well, that's Tim Burton's movie, but it's not. It's Henry Selick's movie. Mm-hmm. So, but because his name is slapped over all over everything about it, like people just, you know, assume that he was the one that directed it and everything else. But during the time, I think he was actually supposed to be more hands-on with it, but he was offered I don't remember if it was I think it may, I don't remember if it was the first Batman or if it was Batman Returns, but one of the Batman films, he was, you know, working on that and obviously focusing a lot more on that because it was a bigger budget project and everything. So, he would just kind of show up on set with Nightmare Before Christmas and kick holes in the wall if he didn't like something and fucking leave, you know, which that's a true story. I watched.
Yeah, I think I've seen the behind the scenes, and he goes into like one of the scale models or something. And he's like, "This sucks."
Yeah, and there's a great episode of it on that Netflix show, The Movies That Made Us. There's a whole episode on Nightmare Before Christmas. Mm. But anyway, back to Sweeney Todd. Sweeney Todd. Trying to find a way to get back into Sweeney Todd conversation.
I guess we didn't go over the bot. Are you just looking for like a segue?
Yeah. You know what? I'll do. Because I didn't do this earlier. Let's just run over the cast real quick of the film because like it is a star-studded cast in this movie, right?
Okay. Yeah.
So of course you got Johnny Depp who plays Sweeney Todd. Or Benjamin Barker is his real name. Helena Bonham Carter is Miss Lovett. Alan Rickman is Judge Turpin. You have Timothy Spall as Beetle Bamford, which the only other thing I think I've ever seen that man in is Harry Potter.
Yeah, a lot of these. Alan Rickman's in Harry Potter, isn't he, too?
Yeah, because he's Professor Snape. Yeah. Well.
Sacha Baron Cohen should have been in Harry Potter. He could have played fucking Borat.
Yeah, Sacha Baron Cohen. Like, I didn't remember that he was in this movie. And when I was seeing, you know, you get the opening credits or whatever, yeah. And I saw his name pop up. I'm like, what the fuck? I don't remember him being in
yeah,
this.
He should have at the end. I was like, the fuck is Borat going to be in this shit? What the fuck?
But what's great is that Pirelli is like such a, like, a perfect fit for his like for him, you know.
Yeah.
And
I didn't
remember, like I said, I didn't remember him being in this movie. I didn't remember anything about Pirelli for this film. So like when he shows up to Todd's barbershop later and he's just like, "All right, mate, I remember you. I used to sweep your floors," or whatever. It's just like, what the fuck? What's happening?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense for the snake oil salesman to be like an entire sham. Like, everything about him being a sham. But yeah, the casting was pretty great for him. It was fun seeing Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yeah. The other actors, I don't think they're as, like, popular, but you've got... Jamie Campbell Bauer as Anthony Hope, who is the sailor that saved Sweeney Todd.
He's also in Harry Potter too.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah. Hold on.
He's Grindelwald.
Yeah. Whoever the fuck that is. I'm sorry.
He's the young Grindelwald. So he's Grindelwald is the wizard that Dumbledore like grew up with and was actually like in love with, and then they ended up feuding later on in life because Grindelwald was, well, they were both seeking the Elder Wand, you know. I could go on. Yeah, the Elden Ring. You got Laura Michelle Kelly as Lucy, Todd's wife. Jane Wisener as Joanna.
I can smell you,
Joanna. And you got Ed Sanders as Toby.
Toby.
Hey, yo, Toby. Get down there and you sweep the floors.
Toby.
Don't make me call Todd down here. You slit your throat. Idiot.
Don't fucking walk in here. They should do a reboot in New York. It's fucking Tony Soprano.
For some reason, I don't think we'll ever see another film adaptation of this movie ever again.
That's it. I'm doing it, dude. It's going to be set in fucking New Jersey. work out of a meat factory.
They'll be like the worst remake since Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, the modern DiCaprio. Yeah, the fucking modern one where they're like fucking texting each other or whatever the fuck.
It's like, here's my sword, and it's his fucking gun. It's like, shut up.
Dude, I saw a clip of that. I've never seen that movie, but it's like the dumbest looking shit I've ever seen in my life.
I had to watch it in one of my high school English classes. Like, we did Romeo and Juliet.
So the teacher, like, put that on, like, after you guys read it to be like, look, here's it.
Yeah.
I'm hip with the kids.
Yeah, I think it was also to, like, teach us, like, I don't remember. It was something about, like, the way that, like, the play could be interpreted in different,
that's timeless. In a
different setting.
Yeah, that's a timeless story.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Ain't nothing more timeless than Leonardo DiCaprio in modern day fucking whatever
on his
city.
BlackBerry or whatever the fuck.
Yeah. He's got the little pin.
Yeah, they should do it for modern day, and he's, like, on Tinder, and he's, like, I don't know, he's like an incel or something. He's like, this fucking roast, you just declined me. Fucking bitch.
Fucking Stacy.
Yeah, fucking Stacy, bitch.
Always going after all the Chads.
Yeah, well, I'm just a fucking normal guy, dude. I'm fucking weight maxing right now, dude. I'm lift maxing.
So yeah, I can just kind of give a quick synopsis of the plot. I'm not going to get like super deep into everything, little thing that happens, but basically, Sweeney Todd arrives in London, and he talks about, you know, how he was like stranded. He was saved by the young sailor, which I already, Anthony.
Yeah,
and he's saved by the young sailor. He comes back because he wants to find out whatever happened to his wife. Because when he was younger, what would you say, fucking 15 years ago or so?
Yeah, he was young. He was younger and more handsomer.
Yeah.
And he was beautiful.
And he was beautiful.
Yeah.
So he was taken away, wrongly accused of a crime that, you know, he didn't commit, and thrown in prison far away because the judge had an infatuation with his wife. And turns out the judge obsessed over Lucy, Barker's wife, Todd's wife, and she ended up being convinced to go to some party he was holding. She was drugged and he raped her. And it drove her crazy. Todd is told by Miss Lovett that she took arsenic. So he, you know, comes to the conclusion that she killed herself.
Yeah.
Which is a great thing. Which is a great moment later on toward the end of the movie where he's like, you lied to me. And she's like, well, I didn't lie. She did take the arsenic. She didn't die from it.
Yeah.
It destroyed her mind, basically. Which it's such a good thing, because you think back, it's like, oh yeah, I guess she didn't ever actually say that
she got his ass herself. On the technicality though. Yeah.
Objection. So he goes to his old home, where it is now being lived in by Miss Lovett, and she runs a meat pie shop out of it, and his old barbershop is upstairs. He's told all the stuff about his wife, about Lucy, by Miss Lovett, who sat on her tuffet.
And stuffed it. you didn't talk about the pussies and the pies, though. The best part.
Oh, yeah. When she sings about the worst pies in London, she talks about getting dead animals off the street and puts them in the pies and... yeah, she talks about the pussycats and the pie.
Pussy in the pie.
And later on when they decide that they're going to start using humans to make the meat pies, she talks about like, oh well, the pussies will only make 5 or 6 pies, but this will make even more or something like that.
Yeah.
So they go out on the town. I think they talk about opening the barbershop because he wants revenge on the judge. And the best way to do that is basically lure the judge to him and slit his throat. They go out on the town, and there is a snake oil salesman who's selling some miracle elixir that smells like piss, looks like piss mixed with ink, and talks about how it can grow hair and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Challenges him to it's this Italian man, or so you think, named Pirelli, played by Sacha Baron Cohen. You get it.
You got it.
You got it. You got it bad.
You got it bad. Damn, dude, that's a fucking blowback now, dude. I didn't fucking even think of that. I haven't thought about this song in fucking like 10 years.
I bet a lot of people were getting their backs blown during that song.
You got it bad. That reminds me of fucking like that song and the fucking that Shaggy song about the angel. He's like, "Shorty, you're my angel.
You're my darling angel.
Closer than my peeps you are to me." I like to do the
baby.
I like to do the deep.
With a honey,
got somebody and the money and the bay. My invitation. Fuck yeah, dude.
Anyway. He challenges Pirelli to a shave off. He beats him, and Beetle is there.
Yeah.
The Beetle.
Oh, I really like the song they have here. I think you cut when he's cutting them and he's doing like the fuck. I can't remember the melody, but you know he's like, "You got to have the something," and the shit. I don't remember, but I really liked
it's,
it.
It's yeah. What is it? Joanna, you can have your picks.
Nah, that's the one the kids sing.
Yeah, I know.
To shave it a face. That's what it is. To shave it a face, to pull it a toot.
Shave it a face. Yeah, you're right. I blow you a kiss. To shave it a face. So yeah, Todd beats him, and the Beetle. And the bard come up to him, and they, you know, he's like, "Yeah, you should come to my shop and get yourself a shave, the closest I ever gave." And he's like, "Oh, I'll see you before the end of the week, I will." That's like the only British accent I can do. I'll see you, mate.
You'll play, mate. We'll watch some fucking footy, mate. Right? We can have a fucking pint of Stella, mate. Can't. That's turning into Australian.
Yeah.
Come on, can't. You have some fucking Stella, mate. We can watch fucking Bluey on the TV with my daughter.
It's so good. The Australian people who listen to this show are like, "No, it's not."
They're like, "Dude, that's me." They're like, "Dude, that's so me." Oi, mate, get in my fucking yeet, you cunt. I got me some fucking VB long necks in here, mate. And we're going to be drinking them all fucking night, mate. Get fucking hammered.
Oh, God. So, yeah, you find out that Sweeney Todd's daughter is now the ward of the judge, Judge Turpin. And Judge Turpin wants to marry her because he's worried that she'll try and run off with some young fella.
Yeah.
And he's also a creepy perv.
Yeah, he needs his daughter wife.
Yeah. So the Beetle's like, "Well, you ought to go get yourself a shave, mister." And he's like, "I think I will." And I can't do Alan Rickman without doing Mr. Potter.
Mr. Potter.
Mr. Potter.
It's Leviosa.
It's Leviosa. Oh, Harry, stop.
Stop it, Potter.
So he goes. He's giving him a shave. They're singing about pretty women. And Right when he's about to slit his throat, the sailor comes back in. Anthony, I'll get his name down eventually. Anthony comes back in, or runs into the shop, and he talks about Lucy, right?
Yes.
And he's, you know, the judge gets upset because he had already caught the guy. He had already caught him trying to, like, stare at Lucy through the, or not Lucy, damn it, that's his wife. Joanna.
Yeah, there you go.
Joanna through the, like, from the street or whatever, and he's like, well, if this is the company you keep, you'll never see me again or whatever, and leaves. And so then they start, I think before this, yeah, before this, Pirelli shows up. Pirelli showed up and tries to shake down Todd, basically saying, like, I know who you are, and if you don't give me half of your earnings, then I'll tell everyone who you really are or whatever. And so he slits his throat. And he says, to shave the face.
To shave
puts him
face.
In the trunk.
To shave it, not.
Which I love. I love the scene where Toby comes up there and, you know, you see Pirelli's hand, like, twitching from.
Oh, yeah, that was the box, that was a pretty cool. That was the dramatic sequence. I do like the drama in this movie, even if I don't like all the songs. I do like the. It's kind of like a classic, like. Like, it feels like a classic movie in terms of its drama, you know?
Yeah. To me, it really comes off like. Like those old 50s and 60s type horror films, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, there's a lot more blood and whatnot in this movie, but it has that similar vibe as far as like the, like you're saying, like the drama, the suspense of everything.
Yeah, it's like one of those mixed with like the like 70s like Tales from the Crypt, like, you know, like horror exploitation kind of shit.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a cool cool aesthetic.
Yeah. So he gets upset. I think this is about the time that you know, after the judge leaves, this is about the time that they come up with a plan to cook people to use them for meat pies.
Delicious.
I love the song when they're just making this decision about how they're like talking about the different people on the street and how like he's like asking, like, well, do you have priest or what about poet and all that kind of stuff? And they're like making comments about, oh, well, you know, this type of person would make the meat green and all that.
Yeah, that song was a bop.
Yeah. So the business starts booming, right? It starts a booming. And Toby's there helping. He's like a whatever, a helping hand or whatever for the meat shop. And Todd is basically going on a killing spree, murdering all the folk. The only time he doesn't kill somebody that goes up to his shop is if they have someone with them, which is shown when like there's a guy with like his wife and child in the shop. And also there's the homeless woman, the crazy woman who's like lurking around, and
we never get a good look at, like, her face.
Yeah. And she's like kind of complaining about the smell and the color of the smoke that's coming out of the chimney at night, and begging people to like pay attention, but no one will, because they just say, "Man, old lady, I don't care what it's made out of; it tastes delicious." And
yeah.
So this goes on for a while. Joanna is sent off to an asylum at one point because the judge finds out that she's trying to run away with Anthony. And then he goes to Todd. Todd tells him about a plan, like, hey, pretend like you're an apprentice to the judge or whatever. And he forges a letter. Wait, he forges a letter. Oh, no, he writes a letter to the judge and gives it to Toby to go give to him.
Yes.
And I think it's summoning him to the barbershop, right? Because he's like, oh, well, you know, I found out. I don't know what the letter, I can't remember what the letter says, but basically it's something like he's concerned about Joanna or whatever, and he summons him there. Anthony gets Joanna out of the asylum by pretending he's an apprentice, and he brings her back to Todd's shop. And before this happens, Toby is like telling Miss Lovett that, you know, he thinks that Todd isn't everything he's cracked up to be, and which obviously she knows that he's what he's doing. But Toby freaks out when he sees the coin purse, because it's Pirelli's coin purse that Miss Lovett stole. And Miss Lovett is like, well, let me take you down to the furnace room or whatever, and I'll show you what I do down there, and locks him in because she wants to get Todd to go kill him. So,
wait, she wants Todd to kill Toby?
Yeah, because Toby is on to them.
Yeah, like, I didn't think she wanted Todd to kill Toby. I thought she was just going to lock him up forever.
No, because they go down there together, remember, and they're looking for him.
Yeah, but I thought, like, yeah, I know he has, like, the thing in his arm, but I didn't figure that, you know, he has it, like, behind his back, you know? And, I mean, I know that it could also be, like, you know, he's hiding it from, just hiding it from Toby, but I figured that he's hiding it from both of them, you know? He's like, hey, I'm going to kill this kid, whether you like it or not, type shit.
No, yeah, I see what you mean, but, so... You know, okay, so let me back up a little bit. So when he comes back from delivering the letter, he tells, you know, he's telling Mrs. Lovett, he's like, yeah, there's demons lurking, and they'll charm you for a while. You know, they'll charm you with a smile, but only for a while. I like that song, too. And she's trying to, like, get his mind off of it, right? So that's when she pulls out her coin purse, and she's like, you know, here, take this penny and go get whatever from whatever place. And he's like, oh, well, that's Mr. Pirelli's purse. Yeah. And she's, you can kind of see it on her face that, like, she's distraught because she likes Toby, she likes having him around, but she knows that, like, they can't keep him around because he's starting to catch on to things. Mm-hmm. And obviously you can't have some kid running down the street saying that, you know, people are being murdered or whatever in the barbershop, because the kid's not completely dense. Like, he knows that something happened to Pirelli, right? So why would she have his coin purse if Pirelli had just left, like they originally said?
Yeah.
So she locks him down in the furnace until she can get Todd to come take care of him. But obviously all this other stuff starts happening, right? So, like, Anthony shows up with Joanna. I keep wanting to call her Lucy. With Joanna, and hides her in the trunk. Or she hides in the trunk because she hears someone coming, right? So, and it's Lucy, the old woman. But it turns out that it's actually Lucy. It's the old woman, Todd. Which this scene is a little bit, actually, it's kind of heartbreaking to me, because it's like, he's so focused on revenge that he doesn't take the time to, like, look at her even before he kills her. Because she's there, you know, he walks in, he's like, who are you? And she's like, don't I know you?
Yeah, and then he sees the judge. He's like, get the fuck out of my way, the judge is coming.
Yeah, he sees the judge coming, so he just slits her throat and drops her body down into the chute.
Yep.
And, you know, the judge comes in. He kills the judge, finally. Brutally. I mean, he, like, stabs him with the damn razor. And he's still alive, too, which is fucking crazy. Because the whole time when he's dropping people earlier, during, like, the montage of him killing a bunch of people, it's like, man... Even if the slitting your throat didn't kill you, I would think that, like, you falling on your head and neck in that fashion would fucking kill you, or at least paralyze you, you know. Mm-hmm. But maybe it's because he landed on Lucy when he dropped down. I don't know. But he drops him down, and then he sees Joanna in the trunk, but he thinks she's a boy. he says something to her, like, he's like, "What are you looking for, a shave, lad?" And you know, he's about to kill her, and then he hears Miss Lovett scream.
Yeah.
And so he runs down into the furnace room or whatever, and when he's down, you know, the judge was still alive and try to grab her or whatever, and then she's desperately trying to get Lucy to the furnace because she doesn't want Todd to figure out that that's actually Lucy, but it's too late. He insists on helping her get the bodies, and when he goes to grab Lucy, he sees her and realizes who she is.
He freaks the fuck out, cries.
Yeah, so he's distraught. You know, that's when they had the whole conversation, and, you know, he's like, "You lied to me." And she's like, "Well, I didn't technically lie." And he dances with her. He's like, "Oh, I can forgive you," and then tosses her ass in the furnace, which kind of made my stomach turn a little bit, because, like, just thinking about that happening, it's like, oh, fuck.
Oh, yeah, getting your ass thrown into the furnace. Fuck.
Yeah.
This shit crazy.
So he goes back to Lucy's body, and he's, like, kneeling on the ground, and he's, you know, basically, you know, in pieces. He's shattered. Mm-hmm. And Toby comes up out of the sewer grate and comes up behind Todd, who has laid his razor on the ground, and grabs it and, like, walks up behind him and slits his throat. And the blood starts pouring over down his chest and over Lucy, and Toby leaves, and that's the end of the movie.
And there's a dramatic shot where he spills the blood all over, and it goes into the schmooer.
It's like pulling all around them and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, I skipped over quite a few plot points, especially the stuff revolving around, like, a lot of the stuff revolving around Anthony, like, the fact that the judge brings him inside, and then the beetle, you know, beats him or whatever and tosses his ass in the street.
Yeah, I feel like, yeah, that's, like, kind of a side plot. I mean, you really didn't even really need to have his daughter in there, really. I thought he was going to kill her, and I guess that would have been dramatic, but I don't know.
Yeah, I couldn't remember what exactly happened with her, but, like,
that seems
honestly,
like,
I didn't even remember.
Yeah, that seems like something that, like, may have gotten cut or something, you know? Maybe it's something that's more prominent in the stage play.
With what exactly?
I mean, with Anthony and what's her face? Joanna. Yeah.
Yeah, it could be, but I think it's just, like, it kind of just speaks even more to the fact that, like, Todd is just so, he's so blinded by, like, just
revenge
that he's not taking the time to even, like, see what's right in front of him. Like,
he's like,
he kills
Venom
his
snake.
Wife. Yeah. He kills his wife, you know, because he doesn't take a moment to actually, like, find out who she is. And then he nearly kills his daughter because he doesn't take the time to, like, pay attention and see that she's actually, you know, a girl, which I know he wouldn't know what his daughter looked like because she was a baby when he was sent away, but, you know, he knew that Anthony was bringing her back, but, and obviously it's also too late. I mean, she knows that he's murdered two fucking people while she was in there. And he's like, forget my face, love.
Forget my...
All right.
Forget my smell. Forget my teeth.
This is a forgettable face, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like pockmarked.
So, yeah, I mean, it...
And he was beautiful.
So, yeah, I didn't even remember that. I didn't remember that Todd died, even. I knew that he killed Miss Lovett because he found out. As soon as I saw the old woman on the street, I was like, or, you know, she's not really old, but you know what I mean. The raggedy woman. Whenever I saw her, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. That's his wife. And, you know, Before I even turned the movie on, I remember that he killed Miss Lovett because she had lied about what had happened. But I just didn't remember exactly what way she had lied. But yeah, I mean, that's basically a rundown of the film. You know, for some reason, I just feel like there's more to talk about, but I can't really think what to talk about.
I don't know. You know? I mean, it's always been pretty clean cut in terms of, I mean, I feel like the story is pretty clean cut. You know, it's like what I was saying earlier, it's kind of like one of those classical dramatic tales, you know.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's a charm in that. I enjoyed it for that.
Yeah. I like I said, it'd been several years since I watched this movie, and I like it. Hell, I may even like it more now than I did back then when I first saw it. You know, it's like we were talking about earlier, Tim Burton, I think he's had some misses in his career, but I don't think this is one of them.
Yeah, I thought it was all right. I don't have a huge negative opinion about it. The only thing I could really say is, like, and I mean, this really just comes from the fact that I've never been a big fan of, stage kind of musicals is, mm-hmm. You know, I think it can, sometimes it's like, you know, you have a musical section and, you know, I'm not really vibing with the music, and I get what narratively, you know, this musical section is trying to convey, and it's like, okay, I get it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know like musicals aren't really like for everybody. And this, I think this is like the first movie we've done that is like a true musical. I know we did The Greatest Showman, and you know, it is technically a musical, but it's also interspersed with like just a lot of like different dialogue moments and all that. Whereas like 95% of this film is music, right?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I love it. I dig it. I dig like the set design and all that. I do wish that Tim Burton's style came out a little bit more, but you know, like we talked about it, I think it just gets kind of swallowed up by the surroundings, by the setting itself. So, but yeah, if you don't have anything else you want to talk about this film, I guess we'll just get into our recommendations.
Yeah, I mean, same thing as you. I'm a sucker for Victorian era London, so I did like the setting. And, you know, I know I said that, you know, Tim Burton's style doesn't really come out quite as much in this, but I still think, you know, I think the set design's fine. I think it looks pretty good. No real complaints with regards to that. So, yeah, I guess we can go ahead and just get into recommendations.
Okay. You can go first.
All right. Yeah, sure, I'll recommend this. I mean, you know, it's not, I don't know, I feel like I should do it with an asterisk. I mean, let me think. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. This isn't like an offensive watch. I don't see anybody watching this and being like, "Whoa, that fucking sucked." You know, unless you already hate musicals to begin with and stuff like that, then, you know, but if you have an open mind to it, I think you can find some enjoyment out of this, at least in some way. So I recommend it.
Yeah, I agree. I recommend the film. I think if you are just adamantly against musicals, you wouldn't like it, of course, but if you can at the very least tolerate a musical, I do think it's very much worth watching. That one other criticism I have about this, and I don't know if it was just a choice they made because they wanted it to show up better on film or something, but the color of the blood,
oh, it's like bright, like, red. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like really bright, and like I said, it could be because everything is like, it's just full of like, you know, grays and blacks and stuff as far as the color palette is in the film, that maybe they didn't want to use dark colored blood because it would kind of just blend in with everything. So maybe that's why they made it so bright. But that's the one thing. That's another, just one little criticism I had. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't like.
Do you just feel like it's like goofy looking? Can like
it is a little silly looking sometimes, because it's just so like when it's stained on like the clothes and stuff, like whenever it's on like Todd's sleeves and everything, I think it's fine.
Yeah, I think it looks, but, like, it looks when good like that, like when it's like that.
Yeah, but when it's like just spraying everywhere and it's like this super bright red, it's just, yeah, it is a little goofy.
I can only imagine even what the colors of the blood look like in real life, because there's that section when they're doing the shave off where whatever his name is puts the Italian flag over the guy, and like the colors are so fucked, like the red and the Italian flag is like orange, so it ends up looking like the fucking Irish flag instead. So I can only imagine how like in reality, like how fucked the color of the blood was, like,
yeah.
I'll agree with it, because I feel like that's like one of the easiest like stylistic. I mean, I feel like anything that has ever done like a muted color palette and has blood, like there's that fucking other movie that's in black and white, and there's like shooting, shit, what is it called? It has like the bald head dude from like fucking, like Fast and Furious or some shit.
You talking about Vin Diesel?
No, the other guy. Hold on, wait. I'm just gonna Google it. Fuck it. Black, and it's like something city or some shit. Black and white.
Actually. Sin City.
Yeah, it's Sin City. That is what it is, I think. But Sin City does this shit. Fucking. There's that Wii game. No, wait. Yes, it is Sin City. So that fucking does that. That Wii game does this shit where it's like everything's like all,
where it's like black and white but blood and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
as long as it's
the reds are still there. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I kind of get what they're going for with it, but I don't know, I feel like it's goofy.
Yeah, so do you happen to know what Lance's next movie is? Did he tell y'all, did he say on the last recording?
I don't remember. No.
Okay. Well, we'll just, if y'all listen to the last recording, I'm sure he probably said it. I haven't edited it yet, so I don't know, and I wasn't on the episode. But
surprise.
Also, Lance's like Lance's work schedule is also kind of off, so it's very possible that we may have to skip to your movie next.
Well, shit, I guess I better pick something then. I don't know. I'll get back to you. I don't have anything right now. There was a movie I was thinking of, but I forgot.
That's fine. I know my next movie is going to be Mars Attacks.
Okay.
I said I wanted to do it like a year and a half ago or something, and it, you know, I ended up just changing my mind by the time we got around to it. But I think it's finally time to watch that masterpiece of a film. Jack Nicholson playing two roles. Not just one. And Jack Black being obliterated.
Yeah. He's in that movie. I forgot.
Yeah.
Shit. It's funny.
Yeah, you want to talk about a star-studded cast. That cast is fucking, like, bonkers. Mm. And it's such a bad movie. But it's I don't know, we'll get to it. But, all right. Well, I guess that's it. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this episode of Filmoscopy Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe if you haven't already. Share it with your friends. Shout it from the rooftops. Get a tattoo of it on your back.
Yeah. On your and, on the back of your cock.
Yeah. And if follow us on Twitter. Or X, I guess. I got to get used to saying that.
I thought they had changed the URL to x.com, but I guess they haven't yet.
Yeah. Well, I think twitter.com also still redirects there.
Oh.
But I don't know. Yeah, follow us on Twitter. Like our page on Facebook. It's Filmoscopy Podcast. So yeah, until next time.
Finish him.
Finish him?
Yes.